Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am once again honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show takes you to those places where you have those aha moments and those mastermind meetings that can change your trajectory or at least bring you a little bit closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. I don't come to you from some $25,000 Hollywood quality studio. I'm here in my living room in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, known to some as the hottest city in America. And we are going to have a conversation today about that perennial topic, branding. I get a lot of folks who want to come on the Business Creators Radio Show and discuss branding, and I can't accommodate all of them because there's only so much to be said about it. So when I see somebody who approaches us and has something that is really unique and is definitely something you should have a pad of paper and two pens out for to capture those aha moments, I rush them to the front of the line. And that is what you're going to experience today when you get to know Zachary Coleman. He is the founder of Creative, which is a successful, grit-focused branding agency and expert in personal and corporate branding. He's helped countless professional athletes, personal brands, and athletic-driven corporate brands build mindsets and help them build their brands around community. This is a piece of the unique approach that we're going to be discussing here. Zachary Coleman, come on in. The weather's fine.
Nice to meet you. You did it perfect. Perfect job there. I love the introduction. I appreciate it.
I even pronounced your company's name right?
You did. You did.
Oh, I got 100 for the day. I can quit early.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You know, I like to say off the bat, a lot of people get it wrong, but you know what? They remember it after they get it wrong the first time. So you got it right. So hopefully you remember it.
Yeah. As long as your company doesn't have the words I really struggle with the word susceptible for some reason. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So I read off your official bio. So impressive. I'm not sure I'm worthy to be here, and this is my show. But what we like to do before we get into our conversation about this approach to branding is turn it over to you for a moment and pull back the curtain. Tell us a bit in your own words about your journey and what's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
Yeah, definitely. I'll try to keep it as short as possible. I could go on for 100 hours probably about my story, because I think we all have countless hours of stories we could share with the world. But, you know, me personally, you know, I grew up with the NFL. My dad was an NFL player years before I was born, and I took up soccer to be just like him growing up. And, you know, honestly, I wasn't too great at it. I was always that guy that would take people out all the time, blah, blah, blah. I got to a point throughout high school where I realized that I needed to follow my own path and not just try to follow in my father's footsteps. See, I had this problem of feeling very unseen and unheard throughout my young adult life. Yeah. I used to throw all the parties. I used to just, I tried to buy love. You know, I tried to buy love from people. And, you know, from a subconscious level, I think that's what put me into the field of communications and branding, because at the time, as I was kind of going through finding a school, figure out what I wanted to do, I just found this fascination with visual communications. I just found this fascination that you could display who you are, how you wanted to represent yourself through communicating visuals, through messaging, and all that fun stuff. And, you know, it took me a few years to realize that, but, you know, I've always loved it. I've always loved building things. And, you know, I went through this whole journey of going to, like a lot of people, you know, I, especially in the entrepreneur world, where I job hopped a lot. I job hopped, And it wasn't until recently, when I kind of went through my next, what I call rebrand focus, that I realized that that was just a reason, because I just wasn't happy. It had nothing to do with money. I just wasn't happy. I learned everything I possibly could at every single business I was at within 3 months. And I never wanted to settle. I wanted to do more. I wanted to learn more. And I had this one job at the Phoenix Suns. And I remember specifically going through my early 20s rebranding period myself, that I, you know, I had a lot of anxiety. I drank a lot. I threw a lot of parties. You know, I had a lot of fun. And though there's nothing wrong with going out and having fun, I tended to use substances like alcohol as a way for me to diminish and hide certain things in my life. And when I got my first job at the Phoenix Suns, it was one of those situations where, funny enough, that I went into it right during literally the same day I started that job. I, you know, my now beautiful wife left me. I was going through, you know, that party phase, and she didn't want to be around that. And I started off at the Suns with a very bad first impression, very bad first impression. Though I was great at what I did. I was awesome working there. That first impression lingered on for, I think, almost a year and a half before I finally slowly got out of that first impression phase. And it was funny. I remember my boss even noticed it. She would, you know, sit me in the back and she'd be like, we're going to send this from another designer and see what, you know, some of the marketing managers think. And they would always love it. But when I send it, they wouldn't. And it had something to do with that first impression, right? And then I moved on to Pearson, loved working for Pearson in the educational sector and helping colleges bring in students. And I was an art director / creative director there. So I was a little bit on the higher end and working with smaller designers with certain projects. But I got a honeypot syndrome over there. I got this, you know, really good boss. Then I got a mediocre boss. And then I got what I call a bad boss. And she just wasn't a great leader. There was a lot of leadership issues with that third round and their pivot and what they were doing. And so I eventually made the decision. I had this opportunity to fly out to New York City, do a gig to work for American Express. It was like a designer's dream, right? Let's go to New York. Let's spend, you know, 6 months. I turned it down because of my fear of my fear of what would happen after that. It was twice as much money, but I turned it down anyway. I tried to get it back a week later. They said no. And so that actually, now looking back, it was actually a pivotal point in my life, because it's actually what pushed me to go out on my own. And because I had such a passion for education and the athletic side, you know, I didn't just take up working out as a way of meditation for myself to get me past some of those hurdles and to evolve myself. I kind of followed in my dad's footsteps in a different perspective, right? And so that goes to show you that, you know, you set yourself a path and a goal of where you kind of want to go in life, and somehow it follows. And so even though I didn't go the route, the same direction that he thought I would, I still, not him purposely, but, you know, me in general thinking going through that direction compared to the other. And so it's just slowly evolved. You know, I'm not saying there isn't any heartaches going. About a year and a half ago probably was the next phase. I kind of, not feeling seen and not feeling heard, led me to start growing a business where I wanted just that, right? I was over-serving. I was looking at those numbers on a screen as kind of my way of being like, oh, people will see me as successful if I make all this money and do this. And it wasn't until about a year and a half ago, as my three youngest children, well, two and one more on the way, started to grow up, that I started to realize I don't need to be validated anymore. I've evolved past that point. And it was the same hurdles, same time and the same period as when I needed to evolve my business. And so funny enough, I was going through a double whammy. You know, I was like, oh, well, now I don't need to be deal with this fear of being seen and heard. I can be seen and heard. My family loves me. I don't need to overserve people. And so I've been starting to evolve myself. And through that came starting to be like, well, I can actually work better if I spend more time on myself and with my family, work smarter. And so I've kind of started to evolve that into my ecosystem with my team. So that I could actually start building a team towards the evolved me, towards my rebrand, and, you know, doing what we all really thrive for. And that's how I came up with my three C's of branding, connection, contribution, and confidence.
Well, let's kind of start there then. That's quite a story. I'm not even going to attempt to comment on it because that's really powerful, except for one thing. You mentioned the whole idea of buying love. And all mm-hmm. too often, isn't that what we see branding become?
I mean, you could say that from a bad perspective. I like to go back to my reference of first impression. You know, everyone says they don't judge a book by its cover, but everyone does. It's just like me at the Suns. You know, it was a good example of, hey, if I came in with the first impression, things would have been different. And so, you know, I think it doesn't, I don't think branding is really, I would say necessarily buying love. It's really representing yourselves and representing yourself on who you truly are as a person. And if people go for it, they go for it. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah, I think, I think you're pretty clear on that. So, you know, we're going to just kind of go through things. You gave us a few points to cover, and we're going to get to all of those. I'm not sure exactly in what order, but I'm having a lot of fun here. And I like to sometimes really start by just defining terms. You mentioned the three C's. I'd love it if you could elaborate on that. I love acronyms. I love lists that start with the same letter. So please, please enthrall me.
Yeah, well, confidence, contribution, and connection, right? I feel like all three of those combined is what would, to me, equals a community brand. And I don't look at community brand as, you know, someone that's opening a nonprofit or trying to, you know, go help the homeless. Though those are important. I say community is much more towards the an individual set of people. It doesn't have to be two. It doesn't have to be 100. It doesn't have to be a million. But a group of people that sync.
Yeah.
You know, it's this sense of you as a leader and your leadership team sync with your doers and the rest of the team on the internal side, but so does your customer, so does your team. And I think that's something that, you know, the world as social media has started to expand and grow has kind of gotten lost. You know, there's so much transactional stuff going out there right now that I feel like community has kind of somewhat gone out the window. And in reality, that community is what we all thrive to want, is, like you said, being liked, being loved, having people that we can contribute to. And so back to the three C's, right? And I'll start with the most important one, which is confidence. And this story really arises from me and my confidence, right? I was not being seen and heard. I lacked the sense of confidence in myself. You know, like I said, I was looking at this invisible number on a screen and I kind of lost my why, so to say. I you know, grew a business to a certain point and I was like, we're doing all these different things and I was overserving and I wasn't, you know, confident in myself because I couldn't really portray myself the way I thought we wanted to be portrayed because I was worrying about that dollar on the screen. And so I really had to sit down and be like, all right, I need to start building confidence with myself, because if I'm not able to build confidence within myself, then how am I supposed to lead other people and lead a vision to where our company is going? And so I had to take a step back and be like, all right, how do you build confidence in yourself? Well, you get back to the things that you love to do that kind of help you bring back that creative juice in who you are as a person and stop just sitting behind a desk and thinking that, hey, if I spend 80 hours at this is going to work, right? And so it's confidence. It's the power of yourself. And it's one of those things that's going to be ongoing as you grow as an individual and as a person. But I had to build confidence in myself. I had to start saying, hey, you know what? Like, I can't take every single phone call. I have to start time blocking my time and not over serving just my clients, but over serving myself in the way that I think my business should run. And I had to start taking a step back and saying, all right, well, I'm going to start dedicating time back into the gym. I lost it. I had three kids. I was trying to run a business. Me and my wife are taking care of these kids at the same time as running a business. And I kind of lost that confidence. And so as I started to rework my time and rework my efforts in that area, I started to realize, hey, I want to work smarter, not harder. So I started to get away from delegation. I started to hire people more around this culture of confidence and leading by example. So I made sure every single person I brought on, I made sure I either had systems or something that I've already done, or I have enough control over from the aspect of I've done it, that I can find someone better to do it. And so I started doing that. I started bringing this confidence in myself. And that confidence, funny enough, from that first impression standpoint, is probably that pillar of the three C's that has this waterfall effect, right? Because the more confidence you build in yourself, the more momentum you build, the more synced you are with your team, the more teammates you bring on that really match your vision, the better your communication is with your audience, if it be visual, audio, messaging, whatever it is. And then that turns around and that confidence, first impression, shows in everything that you do. And so now you're taking that confidence and building it back upon yourself. So it's this ever growing thing. I have this funny superpower where I can tell how good leadership is by the, I'm not going to say quality, but the by their marketing and the collateral that they do. And I'm like, oh, this person took no time in their marketing, which means that they don't really value getting to know their customer and getting to know what they're doing. They're just trying to spray the wall and have probably low retention, bad customer service. And you can tell just by the way you first are represented, that first impression, right? And so that confidence is by far probably the most important thing that I think a lot of people should really utilize, get into that grit and the perseverance more so than the what is it called? Gary V talks about it a lot, working the 80-hour weeks and trying to beat your competitors. It's like, I'd rather work smarter. I'm not saying do everything AI, but I'd rather build confidence off of figuring certain things out that can help me internally, you know? So
yeah,
confidence is so important.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. And, you know, you can hustle for a while, but you burn out on it. Like one thing I discovered about myself is the idea of working a standard 9-to-5, 40-hour work week is not going to work with me. I go in cycles. Like right now, I'm about to enter a cycle of several days of hyper hustle and getting a ton of stuff done. But then after that, I'm going to go into a cycle of wanting to lay off for a few days and having just come to accept that that's authentically part of how I operate has been very powerful.
That is powerful. You find you know, I think that comes back to the next pillar, which is the connection pillar, right?
Yeah.
What do you personally value? Like a lot of personal brands, and to see yourself, I mean, so many people out there, they want to be represented like those large brands out there, and they want to build these brands and say, hey, I'm a corporate brand, I can do this. When in reality, it's like, no, did you know these corporate brands are trying to be more human? So
yeah,
why don't you as an individual learn to connect with yourself, build authenticity, and figure out what you personally value in life? If you personally value working 5 days straight and then taking a week off, then that's the way you like to run things. That's you. That's you're connected with yourself enough to understand that that's okay, and that's how I want to live my life. And those connection that that connection comes down to your values, right? What do you value in life? Me personally, I'm very big on integrity, perseverance, progressiveness. So I made sure all of my personal values sort of started to translate into my brand values. That's my values. I am the leader of my company as a CEO, as a director of marketing, as a director of operations, whatever leadership role you're in, you are kind of that face and that personality that makes the business the way it is. And so the business is going to showcase like you. It just is. It's the outcome of the business and how it performs is going to be on you. And so you have to represent yourself like you are as a person. And so smaller, larger, no matter what, where you're at, you kind of have to look at that. And like I said, me personally, I tell all my employees, I'm like, when we go through the hiring process, I want them to have some sort of personal development situation going on. Like, that's why I said we're athletically driven. We like to work with those types of people. And so I tell them, I'm like, hey, you're going to be more passionate about what you write about, what you talk about, what we do, but you're also going to be able to get your personal time in and what you love to do. And so I let them dedicate 8 hours of their 40-hour work week to personal time. No matter what that be, if it be going to the gym, if it be going for bike rides, one of my employees lives it up, you know, ride horses. And so I feel like their output becomes that much smarter and you know, better that way. And that's just my values. And so I connect personally, not just with myself more, but I start to connect with like-minded people, which at the end of the day, that's what branding really is, right? It's connecting with people, if it be first impression, if it be this, the psychological counterpart of the demographic, right? It's like, I want to work with these types of people because I know them. I know their pains. I know their sufferings. I know what they want to do every day. And it just makes it that much easier for me to actually go in and do that. And so a connection by far is probably I'd say confidence is the one that's out the most important, but I say connection with yourself and with other people is probably a near second. It's probably something that you should be focusing on, probably hand in hand with the confidence pillar. But, you know, these are all the intangibles you need to build a great brand.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Now, another thing that you shared with me is this whole concept of how to go from a me to a we to an us.
Yes. Yes. I love this. It's kind of my title. It's kind of the title of the whole process, right? So I saw this huge correlation between business growth and brand growth, right? So, you know, you have so many personal brands that try to be corporate, but you don't need to be. And I say that's a me, right? I think at the very beginning stages, you are a me. You're trying to figure out yourself. You're trying to connect with yourself. You're trying to, you know, figure out who am I going to contribute to? Like, where do I want to go? You try 80 things. You start building confidence in certain things, and that you do that all by yourself. And then you get to a we, and that's really when you start bringing in teammates, and you come to the realization that we are a brand, not I am a brand. We are a brand. Me and my team are the brand of the organization. Now, to really get to an us. To really get to an us status, and that's what a community brand really is us. It's not just you and your team, but it's you, your teams, and your customers. You want your customers to find you, to be not, you know, from a marketing perspective, you could just say, oh, quality lead. But from your perspective, you could say, hey, they're in sync with our brand. They want to buy our product. They want to come to our service because they relate to us and our brand. And that is really what makes you really a community brand at the end of the day, is that everyone's aligned with the brand, not just you and your leadership team, not just your internal team, but the external customers that you bring in. Because the one metric that I feel like everyone disregards, everyone's so big and fascinated with, oh, I need to get a million calls this week. It's like, no, you don't. No, you don't. Just
please, no, not a million calls. No,
not a million. I don't need a million calls. Bring me, you know, 10 calls. Let me meet 10 people a month. That's all I really need. That's a good one, right? But it's retention. You know, right. I'd say products. If you're a product, I think retention is the biggest thing that they disregard. But I say from a service perspective too, depending on, of course, which type of service or product you're providing, you know, retention is probably the biggest metric you can have. And your champion clients, they're going to keep purchasing from you and be part of your community and even pay more or less, depending on your structure, of course, based off of how much they relate and how much they feel your pain and your suffering, and they understand where you're at, and they understand your voice, and they understand, like, we are part of this brand. And that at the end of the day is what gets you to an us brand.
Yeah. I'm totally with you on that. Now, you mentioned the thing about building retention, and I want to pivot to that a little bit, because one of our clients, Chris Mullins, who's a creator of the Intake Academy, she works with law firms to help them develop their intake strategies. And a lot of this has to do with team building, hiring processes, and retention when it comes to the intake team of the law office. When somebody calls in asking for a consultation, that person who answers the phone the first time, how they transition them to the appointment with the attorney, how they become the point of contact when that person becomes a client. And one of the things that I've heard her recommend on some of her podcasts is that you celebrate the intake team. Using law firms as an example, so often they want to feature the managing partners, the founder emeritus, the associates, and then put them on a big page where they're all ranked, and the size of their picture depends on how much buy-in they have and what percentage of the firm they're leveraged into, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the recommendation is to actually highlight, I mean, yeah, you certainly want to spotlight your talent team, which is your attorneys, but also make heroes out of the intake team. That means the administrative staff, the first point of contact, the client liaisons, and get it to the point where they have their own fan bases, where people who want to engage with that law firm actually get excited about, hey, I love Zach over there in intake. He's my man. And Zach actually gets his own following, which then accrues to that law firm's brand and reputation.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on your podcast and they're your client, but I think that's a beautiful example of a community brand.
Yeah.
I feel like they found that spot of being able to understand, hey, this, we're all in this as a team. We're all doing this together, and we need to highlight every single position and every single person as and give them kudos or praise for the things that they're doing for this company, because we are all a brand. We're all part of that stepping ladder. And I think a lot of companies fail at that. They fail at that. And that's the first thing. I think it's really common. I think it's really common too, in that perspective, in the acquisition team or the intake team, that you get so many miscommunications between, you know, the sales department and the operations department. Like, those lawyers could be coming in and being like, oh, like, what are you talking about? We don't do this type of lawsuit. We do this type of lawsuit. Why are you accepting them as a client? Why are you bringing them in? You know? And so I think they've done a good job from a branding perspective to look at that and say, hey, let's give these people kudos, but it helps build this camaraderie of people to be like, I know they feel like they're doing a positive thing for the company by bringing in the right people.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to take that just one step further, one of the things that truly effective law firms do is have a segue out for clients who don't fit. So let's say a law firm claims to be a generalist law firm, but their real niche is personal injury. But somebody comes to them because they want to have a contract written. Well, it's not just going to be a matter of that person, downloads their free report or gets their free copy of their book and goes into a marketing funnel that sends a series of emails or maybe goes multivariate with chatbots and texts and what have you, and then they just drop off when they don't have a personal injury need. But it actually is designed to capture them and find out that what they're really looking for is a lawyer to help them draw up a contract. So that firm will then have a relationship with another firm where there's another intake hero who can take the baton, so to speak, and that other firm can handle the contract.
Yeah, I think it's funny how much so many different industries relate, right? I mean,
Yeah.
our main market, like we talked about athletes at the beginning, but funny enough, our main market is more so the corporate athletic driven companies. We work with a lot of gyms, and it's a very similar concept. The funny thing with gyms is, of course, they have a much lower price point, so they want to take on more people. But at the end of the day, I mean, look how many different types of people there are in the world when it comes to their micros and macros and their athletic ability, and what they want out of a trainer or what they want out of an exercise machine or a class or a program. And so really being able to work with the gyms, it's a very similar concept. It's like, hey, why don't you? There's enough money to go around. Why don't you partner with this gym over here? If you're a smaller gym, you're not a franchise. Why don't you partner with this gym over here and offer that ability for you guys to somewhat share resources in that perspective, where one could be much more, maybe they're getting training for more keto type stuff, and over here it's much more getting trained for, people that want to be bodybuilders. And I think that, so what you're saying, I think, should be utilized more in, if the law firms are doing it, I think the other company should be doing it. I think the other company should be doing it too.
So one of the things that some of our listeners are involved in is brick and mortar businesses. We have a few different, shall we say, avatar sweet spots, one of which are the startups that are transitioning into revenue. Another are companies that are between 125 and 250 a year who are making the transition from being solopreneurial to being leveraged. And the third one are the bricks and mortar who want to sell globally in their local market. So, as far as being a brick and mortar type outlet, what are some of the things that that type of entity should focus on when it comes to their branding?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think if you're a brick and mortar, I think you need to focus on your internal experience. You have to start from the you no matter what, we're going to go back to what you said about I want to get to the end point, and you may have to remind me the end point of going from being local to going global, because there's so much money in the world that I think that there's a situation going on there. I think that a lot of people that become entrepreneurs have the same pain as me, where it's like I want to be seen and heard. So the first thing they think is we're going to make more money if we start, for instance, we're a gym and we're going to start selling gear. You know, it's like, okay, that's great. Go ahead and do it. But just so you know, that's a whole different business avenue. And now you're going organic. So now your marketing expenses are probably going to have to shift from 10% to 20 because you're starting to focus on organically instead of locally. And the whole point of locally is you don't have to market as much. You just don't. So I would say the experience of your location. I mean, when it comes to our brick and mortars and who we work with, if we get somebody that comes in, we had someone that come to us, and this wasn't actually a prospect. This was a friend of mine. I'm not going to say their name. This happened to their parent, and I thought it was the funniest thing ever. Where they were going to open a they were going to open a putt-putt golf, and I don't know if you know much about Arizona, but a lot of the outside skirts of Phoenix are a little bit, drier in people. And so,
I've been there.
yeah, the Gilbert area specifically is it's expanding, but you have to worry about, there's a lot of desert. And so this woman decided to say, hey, I'm going to build a putt-putt golf out here in the middle of nowhere instead of right next to, What's it called? What's that big golf franchise? I off the
Top
top of my head.
Golf.
Topgolf, thank you. I don't know why I lost it. So Topgolf, and I was like, she lasted 3 months. And it was like that was the first business mistake that I saw that I'm like, oh man, like, oh, I'm gonna lose competition to Topgolf. It's like, no, you're not. You're complimentary. You're a side vertical of Topgolf. This would have been perfect for you. You get free traffic. So first off, I say brick and mortars need to do is they new need to really think about their location. And I get it. I get it. You know, sometimes you have to start smaller. You may not be a best location because of rent or whatever you're purchasing, but you know, always try to think about the market around your specific area. And then I think number two, no matter what industry, and I think it's tenfold for gyms because there's more people in the facility than like a lawyer, but you have to have good experience. You want your experience inside the gym or inside your location to match the experience outside the location. And so that's how I really push people away from the tangibles of, I just need a logo. I just need a website. It's like, no, you do need those things. Those are the tangibles. But what you really need to do is you just need to have your branding and your collateral and everything that you're putting out there in the world match who you are internally, right? And so making sure your team and your location really match what you're trying to do externally. And don't be afraid of thinking, oh, and this is more specific to gyms, but I see it all the time is they're afraid, oh, if I start marketing online or throwing classes up online or throwing gear or whatever, then I may lose them as a client because now they're going to want to start working out at home. And it's like, no, 90% of people want to work away, want to work out somewhere else. They want to go somewhere else. They want to have the experience because that experience is shows the value of the company. So
Well, yeah. I mean, I can tell you that I don't want to work out at home. I mean, you hear all these people that buy exercise equipment and it becomes a very expensive coat hanger.
yeah, as
There's
me, I'm one of them.
a reason for that. It's because people who are highly into physical fitness want to go to a place where that vibe exists, and that's just not at home.
Yeah, let's take that perspective of an entrepreneur, right? I've heard plenty of business developers say this to me. Your output's going to match the experience and where you at or in your location, right? And so that goes back to the leadership and marketing. You know, I work out at home. We don't have a brick and mortar yet ourselves, and we're getting there. I'm getting ready to look, you know how it is with commercial right now. But in one of those situations where I have to move to different locations so that I can be a better leader. But when you think about that in terms of a customer, they want that same thing too. I mean, look at how many people try to work out from home and they're like, oh, like, well, I can do it's great for when I have the three kids and a babysitter or when they're all asleep. But if I want to take an hour away, I need to go somewhere. I need to work on myself, you know? And so, same with a lawyer. You know how many, and this isn't a lawyer, but you know how many accounting firms have emailed me and said, "Hey, we want to be your accounting firm." I'm like, you are the last type of company that I want to be emailing me to do business with because the trust factor has to be tenfold because you're handling my money. So it comes back to that experience. I would take that extra hour, go somewhere. So back to what you were saying, focus on the experience. And then I think lastly, and what a lot of companies don't focus on is what we talked about is that community. I think that at the end of the day, there's enough people in the world, even in a small location. So make sure that you're aligned with your internal values of the company and that you're making sure you're fitting certain people. If you're a lawyer, for instance, you know, you have a great, you know, under of course certain laws, you have a great opportunity to utilize the E algorithm and for Google, for instance, and have different types of lawyers talk about different things. And that allows each one of their personalities and their services to come out from the organization standpoint. But that also allows the customer themselves to be like, oh, I really like Janet from this law firm. You know, I really want to work with her, not the brand specifically, but the brand's part of it, right? So Really working on that from a community. I think digital marketing has gotten to a point where it could go either two ways, and right now, unfortunately, it's starting to go the way that I don't like, which is it's becoming too transactional. People are just thinking, oh, it's easy, you know, you can do this, you can do that, we just need a sale. Back to your lawyer example of giving kudos to the people at the company that do the intake. You know, start focusing on digital marketing being more like that. I'm a very big component of community building, especially for a small organization, is once you have your positioning down and you know who you're targeting, to really allow your members to give you kudos. Go out and get reviews, allow that to build your local SEO. And that's kind of what we really try to focus on, because I look at two things from an acquisition standpoint when it comes to a service-based business. I go and I look at my map. I say, hey, what are the closest places to my house so I don't have to drive 10 hours? If it's, of course, like where I'm buying like a spa or a large value-based product internally, I'll drive a little bit further. But when it comes to like, you know, and that goes tenfold probably for lawyers, I'll drive across the city for a lawyer. But when it comes to like a smaller place you're going to be going multiple times, you want something to be close to you. And so making sure that you're really just trying to, from a simple terminology, just trying to stand out in your local market. And then two, it's that brand. If that customer service is on par, and if I look at them on the map and I'm like, all right, this one's only a mile away, but they have bad reviews. They don't look like their gym or their space is doing too great. You know, the lawyers don't really be nice to their employees, and I'm not going to go there. I'll go to the one 2 miles away instead. I'll take that extra mile commitment because I know I feel like I can trust them more. And that in itself, that's what's going to build you sustainable quality leads and less churn rate on your clientele, is just that trust factor. That's building a brand. That's community building 101, is just positioning yourself and making sure that people are finding you through the efforts that you put out through your experiences. Now, if you're talking about organically, going organically, honestly, I would don't get ahead of the horse. You know, if you're a law firm, for instance, maybe you decide, hey, we have a location here in Arizona. Instead of going worldwide, maybe I'm going to build a location in LA or Seattle if my market is there, and you just build a second location around that. And you start doing it that way if you're a service. And if you want to stay online, great. Just know that you're going to be doing a lot more marketing and spending a lot more on the marketing efforts.
Right. So two things that come up that are kind of related to what you're saying here. Go back to when I first moved to Las Vegas back in 2013. Now, when I made the move, I shipped like whatever possessions I was keeping ahead, and I started driving from Pennsylvania on Tuesday. I arrived here Thursday night, and then Friday morning I got the keys to the duplex I'd rented, and then I arranged to have all the stuff I'd shipped ahead delivered to me. And then I went to a furniture store to order new furniture. I went to the grocery store, and you know how it is when you first move in and your refrigerator is actually full. So I had all that stuff put together, and then we're getting to be about I don't know, about it's like maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and all I have in this apartment is an inflatable mattress that I'd owned for 10 years, a folding chair, and I had shipped ahead the television, the DVD player, and some of my DVDs. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna inflate this mattress, drop it in one of the bedrooms, and I do have some blankets for it, so I'll be good for the night. I'm gonna put the TV on the floor right next to me, and I'm gonna put in fittingly Casino, because what other movie do you watch your first night in Las Vegas?
Good one. I
So I'm
like
lay
it.
so I'm lay so I'm laying on my inflatable mattress, and my travel companions were my two new kittens, who who I ended up adopting before I left Pennsylvania, rather than my original plan, which was to adopt cats after I got here. So they had traveled in a car with me for 3 days, and they had spent the entire day scoping out the duplex, laying claim to various pieces of it, knowing there's going to be a lot more of that once there's actually furniture in it. And I'd had this mattress for 10 years. It had traveled with me so many different places. I'm laying on the mattress. I put the movie Casino in. And by the time we get to the Robert De Niro character's introductory monologue, where he's talking about Las Vegas being the morality car wash. In fact, right about when he said morality car wash, I heard. You know what that meant?
I meant your cats needed the mattress, didn't they?
Yeah, they needed it. All right. So now I'm thinking, all right, so tonight I'm sleeping on a hard floor. How much better does this get? Because my mind wasn't thinking just go to Walmart and get another one. But in a way it was, because it probably would have destroyed that too. And plus I just ordered a king size bed. So it was going to be coming the day after tomorrow. So, I mean, I could rough it for a night or two. Wouldn't be a big deal. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, I could really go for a cigar right now. Where's a good cigar lounge? So what I did is I went in the kitchen, and there was this big book with yellow pages inside it.
Yep.
And so I put that on the floor to use as a doorstop, pulled out my smartphone, opened up the mobile browser, and typed cigar lounge 89128, let's go. 89128 was the zip code I was in, and I added let's go just for kicks. Turned out there was one a mile from me, so I went and hung out there, and that became one of my regular places for about maybe 3 or 4 years. But then that place changed, and I started going to another shop that was just a couple miles beyond that. Going back to your other point, for certain types of businesses, if the experience goes sour, you may go the extra mile, literally the extra mile, but you might not go a whole lot further than that. So when you think about your branding, think about why somebody would want to drive just one more mile for you when there's something a little bit closer.
Yeah, totally. And I'd put that, thinking from a psychological counterpart back to what you said a few minutes ago, when you were like, oh, so many clients have these brick and mortars, they want to expand globally. Rebranding or evolving as a person could go either two ways, right? I think that there's a lot of people that do, and there's nothing wrong with monetizing even more and being like, oh, we have to cut this, we have to restructure to do that. But at the end of the day, if your cigar bar really looked at it and said, hey, how can we position ourselves towards our audience and who we care about, who contribute to? And that's the last pillar, right? Who do we contribute to that we feel like are the people that we want to serve? Like, who do we serve the best? They probably would have kept you as a client.
That could be the case. But you know what these places and most cigar shops in Las Vegas have in common? Is they do have T-shirts with the logo on them, and one of their distributors probably hooked them up with some custom ashtrays with the shop's logo on it and things like that. Those are nice little things, but they don't really make much money on that. They do occasionally get people to buy the pullover, and they get a little bit of exposure from people wearing the pullover. But as far as their organic exposure, it comes a lot more from people going on Instagram, sitting in the shop, holding a cigar and tagging the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just going on Google and writing a review towards a good company. Right.
Right.
Being like, I love going here. It's funny you say that, because, you know, you always wonder why those big you hear about these big tech moguls, for instance, like Mark Zuckerberg, and they're always joking about how he only wears like three or four plain shirts, and he's always like, oh, well, I just don't like,
you same know, here.
Yeah, I do the same thing now, and it's funny because people are like, aren't you a branding expert and you wear plain shirts? I'm like, why would I brand enough pay to brand another company, like, especially when the shirts are these crappy crappy cotton long don't fit shirts. I have a thing about promo stuff. I don't know what it is. It could be because I have three kids now and it's like I have to throw things away on a constant basis, but
yeah.
But I don't like it. I'm like, why are you wasting your money? This is not customer service. This is not showing gratitude. And I know it works. I know it's a thing, but like, no, like I'd rather send that person an email or a gift basket or just say, hey, for instance, if you're a lawyer, for instance, why don't you send them? Here's a good one. Here's a good one. 'Cause it brought back to your cat story. My cat have lived a long 18 years. It was probably one of the hardest days of my life, but we had to put him down like, you know, 4 months ago. And I got a letter from the vet and the emergency room with just all the signatures from everyone there, just all the signatures. And to me, that is good branding. Like they didn't have to be like, here's a shirt for our pet store. Here's a free gift certificate to buy some pet food in the future. I'm like, I don't want that. I appreciate just that you as another human being, you as another brand are looking. And you could say that's a small business thing, but it's like I said, corporations can do the same thing. No matter how big you are, all you have to do is know who your audience is and be like, how can we help this audience live better lives? It's really what it comes down to.
Agreed. You know, it's, and what I'm also thinking of is, you know, you go to the cigar shops and sometimes the reps from the various brands come in and they'll run specials and promos. And a lot of it comes down to buy five of our cigars and get an ashtray or get a lighter. Now, an ashtray or a lighter, if you're an aficionado, it's always good to have a couple extra ones. People tend to like that stuff because when you have a lighter, you got to have three for when you lose the other two. And an ashtray, if you ever have some guys over and you want to sit outside, well, you're going to need an ashtray for that. Yeah. So those are good. But sometimes what they'll also do is they'll want to foist things like golf shirts with their logo and such on it. And I remember this one time, I bought into their special and I said, you know what, instead of the golf shirt, I think this lighter is worth about the same amount. Can I just have two lighters? And the guy actually took the golf shirt and physically pressed it into my hand and said, here. Now, I don't have the physique where golf shirts look good on me. It's actually not recommended for somebody of my body type. I was never going to wear it. And not only that, it was white, making it even worse for my body type. I mean, I've gone through image consulting. One of the first things that I got when they did the analysis, please don't wear white polo shirts. They make you look even bigger than you are. So that was just an example right there. It's like, I don't want the damn shirt. And finally I had to say, I like your products. You yourself, I know you're a nice guy and everything, but if you try and force me to take this polo shirt, you're just going to find it laying there when I leave. I don't want it. Give it to somebody who wants it.
And there's three things there, just three troubles I see right there. One, you just wasted a resource that could have been given to somebody else.
Yeah.
Two, you just tarnished the brand. They just like literally they just tarnished it. With a customer service, just one little customer service. So I think it comes down to this, and this is my biggest to speak Family Guy, you know, grinds my gears a little bit, is that, you know, you have this situation where why do so many people that are building a business say go right to, and I mean, we do it for a living, right? We do visual branding, we do all that stuff, but why do they focus on that tangible as the product when in reality it's like, no, the brand is you and the company and the people you bring in. The visual representation and those tangibles are just representations, should just be an essence or a figure of the internal brand. But it drives me crazy how I see so many companies go straight to, just give me a logo, just throw me a website, just give me that tangible, let me showcase to people. Because, I mean, you know off the top of your head just now, you just stated it, like, the logo didn't make you leave. the atmosphere of the company and the way they handle that promo material just totally like affected.
Yeah,
your
it's like, dude, I just don't want the shirt. It's not a big deal. I mean, and even if you said no, I can't give you two lighters, I said, okay, cool, I'll take the one. Give the shirt to somebody else. But man, it was like it seemed like they were really zeroing in on hoping I would wear that polo shirt around so people could see the logo. Meanwhile, they were more likely to get business when somebody, and this is a very common question, they say, what kind of cigar do you like? And so if I say, I like the JFR Super Tour Maduro, I like the Oliva, I like the VSG. These are brands that I enjoy, and I'm going to tell people that. And what often happens there is the reason people are asking is because they're not sure what they want to get for themselves. So I recommend something, and I'll say, yeah, I'll try that. And that's how these brands get more customers and get more mm-hmm. devotees.
Yeah, I think you just nailed it on the head right there. I think that people, community is people, right? And so at the end of the day, throwing a logo on a shirt isn't going to bring you more business. I think you just relayed a good actionable result right there of and you know, I think we're both in marketing, so I think we both see it. That one of the biggest things I hear people say when it comes to the branding side is they're like, well, we can't track branding. We can't track it. There's no numbers. There's no numbers to it. I'm like, actually, you just gave us a number right there. You just basically said, well, you lost me, and I could have brought, you know, trying to give me a shirt because of bad customer service, and I could have brought you 2 to 3 people. Even maybe tenfold, because then those 3 people would have bought 3 more people.
Yeah.
And so forth and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, I just gave you a practical example of how viral marketing works based on reputation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's branding and building a community at its core.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that would have gotten them a lot more business than some random person seeing me wearing the shirt with a logo. Because I can tell you, I don't really wear logo clothing because I have not had a lot of people really ask, what does that logo mean? That's just not a common conversation in my life.
It's not it's not for me either. And it comes back to that. Even you they offered you a free one, but it's even for me, I'm like, you know, and nothing against these bigger brands. I still wear, like, you know, the brands for like working out and for, you know, nice clothing in certain perspectives. But man, I'm you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, and me and my wife, we're pretty successful. Like, we don't have to worry about, you know, how to pay that next bill or anything like that. But I'll still go to Goodwill and get a plain sheet. I'm like, oh, this is a nice shirt. This is nice. I don't need to go out there and spend millions of dollars on, not millions, but, you know, hundreds of dollars on, you know, a shirt over here, because I think that, you know, it's going to match a logo. I'm like, why would I buy something
like
that matches somebody else? We could be biased. At the end of the day, it could just be because we're in marketing and we see it. But
right, but yeah, like we know what the logo's for. We know what the end goal is.
Yeah, we know what the agenda. We know what the agenda is of selling that Nike free publicity. And there's nothing wrong with free publicity, and it is a sense of building community. But I'm more of a hey, if you're gonna sell a product, make the packaging really good. Make it something like, hey, like, even if you're a lawyer, for instance, and I don't really know off the top of my head, because I don't work with too many lawyers, how, if they would ever handle any kind of packaging or any kind of product in that solution. But make it where it's exciting. Make it where it's like, I got a pair of gloves, for instance, and I was like, man, like, I see these gloves, they come in, and the first thing I think is, man, I'm going to go use these gloves right now. Oh, man, I'm going to go ride this bike right now. Uh-huh. That's going to build retention, not the whole, like, hey, let's give them a shirt that they're probably going to use to wash their car. And
I know. yeah. You know where those sometimes come into play is when I'm moving or need to pack something. They make really good packing material.
Good packing material. And two, it's that shirt that I keep in the back of the closet just in case all my clothes are dirty. And then I'm like, but they never aren't. So I, like, it just sits there and collects dust. And then finally, like, 5 years later, they go to Goodwill, and those are the shirts I don't pick up.
Well, let's make this real simple. I mean, you've told me over the course of our conversation that you're married and you've been single before.
Yes, I have.
Okay, so when you were single, you sometimes ran out of dirty clothes, you ran out of clean clothes, and you'd have to resort to that shirt.
I did. My wife always makes fun of me because there's about two or three shirts in my closet right now that I still have. I'm 38 now, so she's like, you know, you still have a shirt here from high school in your closet, right? And I have like two left, and I'm like, I like the shirts, and they grew with me.
When's the last time your wife let you get to the point where you had to resort to those shirts?
Oh, I mean,
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
yeah,
So
yeah.
again, that would not even be relevant for you at this point.
Yeah, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. I'll give them to my kids. And I'm at the point now where I'm just like, here, you guys, wear this. You can be the brand ambassador for not. I won't say Nike, but for like, you know, some of those smaller brands. I'm like, oh, it's cold outside. You can wear the shirt. Your shirts are dirty.
I mean, another thing is, going back to the cigars, if it's a cool but not cold evening outside, and I'm thinking that I want to go listen to a podcast or read a good book or a good audio book and sit on the balcony with my laptop or my tablet and have a stogie while I'm doing that, I might need a couple extra layers. I'm not going anywhere and I'm here alone. Literally anything will do.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
that's where that logo t-shirt might suddenly come into play, but still nobody's going to see it.
Yeah, no one's gonna see it. Another thing, it's like for my wife, for instance, it turns into one of her night shirts. She's like,
Well,
oh,
yeah.
and but no one sees it but me, but I'm not looking over there like, yeah, you know what? The brand recognition of that I'm gonna go buy
Yeah.
that product, you know,
Yeah, we're
I
yeah,
it.
we're yeah, we're yeah, okay, we're a couple guys here, and our audience are adults here, so you know how it is when a woman loves a man, she loves to get into his clothing, particularly the oversized shirts. There's just something about that makes her feel bonded to him. And I'm talking serious now. And when she wears that shirt for you, that's an expression of her love and her devotion and her desire. You're probably not desiring that brand of laundry detergent that's on the patch next to the collar in that moment.
Yeah, you know, and
You're
not to have the.
not gonna say, "Hey, honey, love the shirt. I just remembered we're out of Tide. I gotta run to the store."
You know, if you really want to look at it from a smart move, and this goes back to when it really would matter if someone would do this. Look at like one of those stores like Fascination or something, and they're selling products. Maybe they had their shirts out and they said for your wife's nightshirt, because then you would start thinking about that because it relates to the brand and the position that you're going after. You'd be like, oh, I'm gonna get more of these nightshirts because for free now, because it relates to the situation.
That fascination. I just have to ask because I haven't heard of it. Is that like intimate products?
Yeah,
See,
yeah.
that right there is actually on course
Exactly.
because you're going to be thinking intimate products when you're in that situation. Yeah. And especially if you and her are a little adventurous, and you might decide as part of your foreplay to pull out the laptop and just peruse a little bit. What do you think's going to be the first thing you type into the Googles when you Bing the Yahoo out of them?
Yeah, that's true.
Fascination. Fascination. Because there are many brands out there, but only one is fascination, only one's on the shirt.
So back to your situation with the shirt and that situation. You're right. The way they could have gotten you better is with the lighter, because the lighter portrays to the cigar. I mean, I have a local cigar bar that we go to every once in a while with my friends when I have that, you know, hour I can get out of the house. And it's the same concept. Like, I don't really use lighters anymore. I don't keep them around the house. But it's funny because when I go there, that would be that when they do give free lighters, that's what I would want. You know,
Right,
and so.
and we take this a step further. If I'm the fact is I'm going to be holding that lighter more often, so I'm going to get more exposure to the brand through that lighter.
Yeah, you're going to be holding on to it more, and most likely with like any lighter, it's probably going to switch hands like 8 times in its life.
That's why I said lighters are good because you need one for when you lose the other two. Absolutely. All right. So we are actually at the top of our time here. We could keep this going forever, but you have a gift for our audience, and I'm going to share that with them now. It's a download, and it's going to help leaders. I know you designed it for the gym space, but I believe pretty much anybody could use it. And it's about determining where you are with branding in regards to building a community. Now, there's a link to it. I'm going to tell people to go to your website, which is at creatative.com. I'll spell that. CREATITIVE.com. Now, when you get to the website, you want to go to the menu and go to the section that says downloads, and you'll find the third item is the brand questionnaire. There's also a personal branding exercise and a webinar to watch, but your gift is the brand questionnaire. They can actually take up on all three gifts if they so choose. I'm going to give the direct link to the brand questionnaire in the notes for people who are watching this or listening, just to scroll down. And otherwise, go to creatative.com and discover how Zach Coleman's unique brand of branding can serve your business and help legacy brands build that competitive advantage. So with that, Zachary, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor, and believe me, an education.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. And yeah, like you said, that download is actually for any type of company. But if you are a gym leader in the gym space, go to leavethatmark.com and you can learn more about some of our services through the gym space.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, thank you. Thank you so much. And you have yourself a great day.
Thank you. You too.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.